a programming note. We have a 2:30 time certain. If approved by council, it significantly moves forward our efforts to complete an initial agreement to bring a new company to town. So I apologize for those of you that have been waiting, but it means that we will pause in our discussion of rates to do the discussion of bringing a new company to town at precisely 2:30, even if we're in the middle of a sentence. That means you, Director Schaff.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, it's 2:20. We were talking water rates, and
So, David Schaff, we have a, I think, the most, at the Water Bureau, exhaustive public budget process of any bureau in the city. So, in September, we start our processes. The Budget Advisory Committee recommended a series of cuts that went to PERB. They agreed to those cuts. I didn't recommend those cuts to the council, but they are, in all fairness, cuts that have been vetted with all the public members and private sector members and through our separately appointed PERB board that would accomplish the reduction Commissioner Fritz requested. So, David, do you want to go over that?
Sure. When the Water Bureau Budget Advisory Committee got to the point where we were over our projected rate of 13% from where we projected last year, we proposed changing our lowering our projected rate by just about a percent by looking at our non-mission critical list, the list that the PERB has for the 5 years I've been here spent talking about. And we looked at our of those on that list, of those things on that list, we looked at those things that were above and beyond what would be considered standard or usual in the industry. One of them is our low-income program. Our low-income discount is 50%, and that is, as far as we know, the highest and most generous in the country. We looked at lowering that low-income discount for water only to 25%. Our crisis voucher is $150. We looked at lowering that to $50. That achieved us 0.9% of a savings.
How long has that program been in operation?
It was original. It went up to 50 in the last few years. Dave, do you have that?
I don't know if I have that with me.
I will. The program has existed for a long time, but the 50% discount is not brand new, but relatively new.
So
it went up.
I don't support. I agree with Commissioner Leonard's decisions on all of those decisions, the package that came with that 1%. What I'm interested in is with the deferred rate increase in the maintenance and operations, what do I not get if we do a 4.9% increase each of the next 3 years rather than 5.7, 4.9, and then 4.3?
You're asking me to cut operations and maintenance as opposed to things like the non-mission critical ones, and I'm not prepared to do that.
Commissioner Fritz, if I could just ask the Director Schaff get through his list.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay, and then we can return to that line of inquiry.
If the
can you speed through this, please?
Sure. If reducing our low income program doesn't fit the needs of the council, I'm spending $1 million on decorative fountains. As a matter of fact, the council just gave me two more new ones that all but tripled the pumps that I have to take care of, with gave me absolutely no additional money to do it. That's $1 million. So I can trim back our decorative fountains either by operating them less per year. You know, we shut them down in the winter. We'll shut them down for longer. The SDC waivers. I spend $285,000 on SDC waivers. Community gardens, I budget $20,000 to build to provide water to two community gardens a year. All of those things are non-mission critical that aren't related to providing water to our customers.
Does that add up? That adds up to what? A percent cut?
Well, if you add up all of them, it adds up to well over a percent. The decorative fountains are $1 million. That's over a percent. The low-income discount, that's 0.9%.
Where did we add the two decorative fountains?
The director's fountain, which is the one up across the street from the Fox, and then NATO. The NATO legacy fountain on Waterfront Park.
Oh, where the Saturday market is?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yes, I can do that. I can trim any one of those non-mission critical items in order to come up with...
The Bureau would still run with all of that gone, is your point, right?
Yes.
Okay. And we would still be providing water services if we shut all that off.
Right.
But it would be noticed.
It would be. But if I stopped answering the phone, that would be noticed. If I stopped replacing hydrants, that would be noticed.
Fair enough. So how would you respond to the criticism of that being on the list as a Washington Monument cut?
Well, they're the things that the Citizens Budget Advisory Committee and the Portland Utility Review Board have been saying to the council for several years, well, you should be looking at. That's what the auditor's office looked at. Sure, they're Washington monuments because they are what make us Portland. But the reality is they're less important than replacing hydrants. They're less important than making sure water quality is protected. The argument that you've heard today all has to do with we don't want you to build these LT2 projects. If it weren't for LT2, I wouldn't be sitting here for hours on end. That's the reality. If you tell me you can't get a 12.9% increase, you can only get X, that's not going to change what the people sitting behind me all day today have argued about. Unless you decide to defy the federal government, that is something that you have to move forward on. So I would have to adjust elsewhere. And what I'm telling you is I would adjust in the non-mission critical areas.
Okay.
And you had a question, Commissioner.
To my colleagues, just a pause. We do have a 2:30 with special guests from out of town, and it is about job creation. So even if you're mid-sentence at 2:30, we're going to pause and take the agenda item on solo power. Please continue.
I was going to answer your question about significant development. I think potentially... It is. And the reason why I think it's potentially a significant development that DHS now has primacy is that the federal government, as some of the people have said, does tend to have a one-size-fits-all rule. Oregon isn't quite as rigid. So, for instance, we comply with the lead and copper rule in a manner that the EPA absolutely does not like and does not support, but Oregon does. And so I think we have a better chance than we did on our variance application for treatment than if we were going in front of the EPA. The EPA has all but said we would deny it. And we will recommend to Oregon that Oregon denies it. So I think we have a better shot.
One's off. And what about storage?
Well, the storage is, one.
Not so much, or maybe not so much whether we do, but maybe the timing over which we do it.
What I would say is that we would have to have a reason. And what what Oregon has told us is that a legitimate reason would be something along the lines of if you have something that happens during construction of these complex projects and you can't meet the deadlines, then we would be willing to talk. We would have to have a reason like New York did to say that deadline doesn't work for us anymore. We want to change it. And I don't have that reason. Now, perhaps other people will say, what about this, and this? The primary reason that I've heard is cost. And this, when Congress modified the Safe Drinking Water Act and told the EPA to create an LT2 rule, they said you may not consider cost in your rulemaking. That will apply to Oregon, too.
And this is a good place for us to pause. Thank you. Unless there's objections from council, suspend the rules, and we will take a recess from this item to consider our 2:30 time certain. Carla, can you please call, read the
title? Mayor, before you do the title, may I just, because there's some stuff later on, and I want to just make sure people know, if you could play traffic cop for a second, because, for example, I have some Bureau stuff at the end of our regular agenda, and it may be we're not going to get to it today. So is your intent to run Council through as long as it takes today to get to the agenda?
Yeah.
And that could mean through
we don't have tomorrow.
So 5, 6 o'clock if necessary?
Correct.
Okay.
We don't have Council tomorrow. Hopefully the earth will still be here.
It's Saturday.
Please read the title for the 2:30 time certain.
Item 505. Authorized loan guarantee agreement with Oregon Department of Energy with respect to Solo Power, Inc.
All right. Today we are seeking City Council approval for a deal to build Solo Power's next generation solar manufacturing facility here in Portland. About 4 weeks ago, we heard from the state and from Solo Power that the company was interested at looking at other sites than their initial site near Wilsonville. In the following weeks, Solo Power's executive teams toured sites in Portland, and I and Chair Scott Andrews and my staff toured their Solo Power's facilities in San Jose. In the past 2 weeks, we have worked with the state, and I want to underscore our thanks for the state's efforts and staff in partnership with city staff, PDC, Portland Bureau of Transportation, Office of Management and Finance, and the City Attorney's Office to put together an incentive package and complete our due diligence. In short, this was a very collaborative effort among a lot of partners and was done with a great amount of speed and agility. The thin film panels that Solo Power manufactures weigh far less than traditional glass-covered solar panels and can be installed directly on the roof. Solo Power's potential investment at full investment is $340 million. They're expected to hire more than 150 workers within the next 12 months and 481 employees at full build-out. The average annual salary per employee is estimated to be around $51,000 plus benefits. Initial operation will require about 200,000 square feet. When fully operational, it will be 400,000 square feet. And with that introduction, I'm pleased to have, we have, I think, three quick panels. And we're going to start with Tim, CEO of Solo Power, Tim Harris. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Tim Harris. I'm the CEO of Solo Power. And I thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity to address the City Council. I notice it's another perfect day in Portland, and I think we'll take credit for that now because it's two trips in a row. So we're bringing the weather with us from California. So Solo Power has spent over the last 6 years and $150 million in multiple years of our lives on the management team developing this next generation solar module. This module is 260 watts of power, most powerful module in the market, and weighs 13 pounds, and is not only lightweight but flexible and kind of perfect for any rooftop application throughout the world. Made in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So these lightweight and powerful modules are optimized for an underserviced, very large and fast-growing market, the commercial and industrial rooftop market, and that's really a key market in both the U.S. and worldwide. This unique product is produced with an extremely cost-effective world-class manufacturing process, and combined with the innovative support from the U.S. DOE, State of Oregon, and the City of Portland, will enable us to manufacture PV modules here in the States and ship throughout the world. So we're very, very proud and pleased about that. We have chosen Portland and reaffirmed our choice of Oregon as our manufacturing headquarters based on the quality of the people and the established ecosystem of support and suppliers for our wafer fab style manufacturing processes. It is also helpful that that Portland is a short flight from our first production and our development facility in San Jose, and that Portland is a beautiful place that people are happy to spend time in or even relocate to. So it's a really nice added benefit. Of course, my family and I spent 5 years in Malaysia bringing up factories, so having people fly an hour and a half to Portland's a lot easier than that. So it's a really big plus. We ultimately expect to produce over 400 megawatts of modules per year with over 500 full-time employees from this site. It's a nice picture. I don't know if you can see it, but this is one of the very low-cost applications, rooftop application, where in this case the panels are adhered directly to the roof. So it's minimal cost, and of course it's awfully good in monsoon-type territory as well. Project is budgeted at $340 million, very, very big commitment. We expect to grow the team from the initial 150 people for our first line to 500 people with full factory. And in my experience, and we've done this repeatedly throughout the world, the real benefit is not only the direct jobs, but the multiplier effect of spending this much money locally. So this is very high technology. It's got great capital intensity in terms of the invested capital dollars per watt, but it's still a very complex process with multimillion-dollar pieces of equipment. It's which, on the whole, is really a good thing. We have absolutely minimal number of assembly-type jobs, minimal handling jobs. And what we have are thinking jobs, where intelligent and flawless execution maximizes performance. And this, of course, requires excellent people and extensive and ongoing training and commitment. The existing enterprise zone is very helpful, and in return, of course, we've made commitments on jobs and living wage compensation and benefits. And it's been my experience, as I mentioned, opening factories throughout the world, that our team will work really hard to be valued and valuable members of this extended local community. And I think this is just a huge win-win for solar power and for Portland. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Tim. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Scott Andrews. I'm Chairman of the Portland Development Commission. I'm going to start by trying to do a very complete explanation of the incentive package. Ken Rust is here then to explain the guarantee portion of it, and then I will close our very brief presentation. The incentive package actually has three pieces to it, two of which the City of Portland and PDC is involved with. The first piece is a state energy loan program, $20 million loan.
Point slide.
Can you put it on? Thank you.
That is the loan that the state is requiring the city to provide a $5 million guarantee on, and Ken will be giving you the details with regard to that guarantee. There's also $20 million in BETSI, which is an investment tax, a state program. It's actually worth probably about $14 million in cash. The last and most important piece locally is the $17.9 million expected return from the enterprise zone property tax abatement. And I think that is the one that is least well understood. The enterprise zone is a state program. There are 90 of them, I think, in the state of Oregon, several of them in the city of Portland. The location that solar power is looking at is within one of these zones. It actually provides for an abatement of taxes on the new equipment. There's some nuances, but it does not reduce taxes on existing facilities or equipment. It lasts for 5 years, and at the end of the 5 years, everything goes on the tax rolls as though it was there in day one. So it's not a check up front. It is the ability not to pay income taxes on this monster investment of equipment, basically, and construction to be able to build the plant to begin with. I wanted to point out that as a requirement for solar power to access their U.S. Department of Energy loan, they're required to have a clean balance sheet. What this means is they are eligible to take the loan down when they complete the first line, and have a working product, which they expect to have next spring. At that point, in order to build the next three manufacturing lines, they will need to pull down the federal loan, and the federal loan will require them to pay off the state loan. So We think that there is a very little bit of risk associated with this. They have an operating demo line in San Jose, which I've had a chance to see, which is actually has licensed output. They are selling these out of this plant. They have a couple years of production for the first line that's already in the pipeline. It's sold. There are customers for this. And as a matter of fact, I've had several folks come up to me and say, once they've seen this, who do I call because I want to buy this stuff. It is really fantastic. So those are the pieces in place. The Enterprise Zone is an existing program. I wanted to point out, Commissioner Fritz and I met earlier in the week, and she really wanted me to point out that this program is available to any company currently in Oregon, not in the United States, that would bring manufacturing jobs into the zone. They would qualify for this just like anyone else.
We have other vacant sites that people could be welcomed to.
Yes, we do. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ken to explain the guarantee for that SLEP loan.
Thanks, Chair Andrews. I'm Ken Russ, the Director of the Office of Management and Finance. I want to talk a little about the loan guarantee aspect, which was one of the more challenging pieces of this financing puzzle to put together. And the reason why it's challenging is because for the city to provide a guarantee to a private company always creates some very tricky legal issues with regard to lending a credit. And the reason why it was important that we provide this loan guarantee is in that the package of incentives and the financing structure that had been developed in Wilsonville had a loan guarantee, and had a loan guarantee that was provided by the federal government because of the rural location of Wilsonville. Don't ask me how it qualifies, but it did. But that being said, that was an important part of the financing structure. We needed to replicate that if we wanted to be successful in bringing solar power to Portland. So working with the city attorney's office, Linda Mang and others, and also with PDC staff, we looked at how we would be able to provide a guarantee that did not involve non-tax revenues, and that becomes a very key distinguishing factor. And what we concluded is that we could create a guarantee of non-tax revenues by pledging to the state in the loan guarantee the available meter revenues associated with the city's on-street parking meter program. We've actually pledged available meter revenues to various obligations that are already outstanding, and although we've never drawn on that. And by doing so, we're able to create the guarantee and do it in a way that we think also protects PBOT's particular financial interest. So what we're offering the state is a lien that's subordinate to bonds that are already outstanding that have a pledge of those revenues already, because that's important. PBOT expects to use those revenues to pay debt service on other bonds that are outstanding, the transit mall improvement bonds, and the SELP loan would be actually in front of that particular obligation that they have. We are not going to have a reserve fund that would be established up front, so it would be simply a pledge on these revenues if required and payable from those revenues over time. The available meter revenues total about $12 million net of the cost of collecting those revenues, so it's a very substantial annual cash flow that should be more than sufficient to make good on the guarantee if necessary, and we believe that the likelihood of that is extremely low. But in order to protect PBOT in the unlikely event that there is a draw on the guarantee, we will be entering into an IGA, an intergovernmental agreement with PDC, whereby PDC would agree to replenish that amount spent by PBOT on other transportation projects that are happening in an urban renewal district. And one of the projects that we're looking at is that could be a potential backfill for that would be the redevelopment of the 10th and Yamhill parking garage. So we have a way in which we're able to make a guarantee to the state. If it's drawn upon, PBOT is backstopped by the PDC, which basically shifts the ultimate obligation to our economic development agency, the Portland Development Commission, which we think has a lot of symmetry in terms of what we're trying to do in terms of bringing jobs to the city of Portland. So we think it's a prudent plan. We think it's one that is low risk, but in the unlikely event that we were asked to draw on it, PBOT is protected, and it is part of, I think, the program of trying to bring jobs to the city of Portland. So I think it was a very good and satisfactory conclusion, and I'm really happy to be able to bring that forward to the council and really pleased with the quick work by the city attorney's office and others to help make this happen.
All right. Unless
any questions for – if not, I, too, want to thank Ken and the city attorney, our staff. When Sam and I met with the principles of solo power initially, as long as they found a spot in the right district, we weren't worried about the property tax side of it, but we knew it was going to take some quick, creative, and good thinking with regard to the loan guarantee in a very short period of time, and everyone has done that. So it's been a great job. This company's decision to join Vestas, Iberdrola, Element Power, and Revolt, again, it confirms Portland's position as the center for green technology. It also underscores the value of having a targeted, clear economic development strategy. I can't overemphasize enough your approval of that first strategy in a decade has time after time after time paid off, and this is one that I can point to as well. The city's quick response, our partners at the mayor's office, at PBOT, at OMF, at the state of Oregon, Bruce is here. It was an amazing effort to save this company to stay in Portland. Clean technology has always been an area of focus since that economic strategy was developed, and today with SoloPower's announcements, we're taking another huge step forward in our efforts to create the most sustainable economy in the world. Portland is in the forefront of clean technology in the United States, and these industry leaders know that. I had an opportunity to accompany the group on the visit to San Jose, and I could not have been more impressed with the entire tour. We had a chance to meet the entire executive team, and if you get a chance to see their resumes, their experience, their background is just absolutely outstanding, from having built plants from scratch in Malaysia to taking startup companies to tens of millions of dollars in sales to raising money. 25 current patents, I think it is, and 19, and I heard something like 45 more in the wings, which will protect the intellectual property here and make sure that at least over the next few years there won't be a close competitor. I can tell you I'm very confident that this company is going to be around for years to come, and would hope that you would help us and pass the ordinance necessary to make this happen.
Thank you. Why don't we proceed with our panels, and we'll have questions at the end if anyone on council thinks of them at that time. Thank you very much. Nick?
Council, I suggest that you substitute. Motion and substitute the ordinance before you delve into this discussion.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All right. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to approve the substitute?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
My understanding is this simply adds in the exhibits from the previous draft. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right. We'll hear next from, Sandy McDonough, Jonathan, and John Mullis.
Thank you, Sandy.
Director Quentin, are you testifying today? Okay. Welcome.
Hello. Mr. Mayor and members of council, I'm Sandra McDonough, President and CEO of the Portland Business Alliance, and I'm here today to support the loan guarantee and other incentives which will enable SoloPower to locate its new manufacturing headquarters here in Portland. As you know, over the last couple of years, the Alliance has focused a lot on increasing the awareness of the need to grow private sector jobs and retain the ones we have in our region. Over the last 12 years, wages and income in our region have fallen relative to the national average, and in fact, our wages and incomes are less than the national average. This isn't good for families in our region or our state, and it's not good for public services. As you know, Oregon is an income tax-dependent state. If we want good schools, great open spaces, and adequate social safety nets for our vulnerable residents, we need good jobs that generate healthy family wage salaries and then yield the income tax revenues that our state depends on. And that pyramid is strongest if the base is made up of high-value private sector jobs. SoloPower is exactly the kind of employer that will help make our base strongest. Initially, we will benefit from the great construction jobs as the site is prepared, and I'm sure John will be talking about that. And then when the production starts, there will be about 170 jobs, as you heard, and it could grow to as many as close to 500. And these are really great manufacturing jobs paying an average of $51,000 a year. Moreover, they're traded sector jobs, which means that they'll be bringing new wages into our region, and those dollars can then, new dollars into our region, and then those dollars can be spent at other local companies, which will benefit the whole economy. This is consistent with the city's economic development strategy, as Chair Andrews just referenced, and it's a huge win for our region. I also want to thank the officials in Clackamas County and Wilsonville, as well as Business Oregon, who initially talked to Solo Power about coming to the greater Portland region, and then when the site became unworkable for reasons that were outside the control of the officials in Clackamas County, I'm very proud that Mayor Adams, the Portland Development Commission, other city leaders, and all of you stepped up very quickly to provide a site that will keep these great jobs in Oregon. So this is a great win for Portland, for our region, and our state, and I want to congratulate all of you and urge you to vote for the ordinance today.
And I, although we couldn't share with you the name of the company, I want to thank you and your team for providing us advice as well as we sought to do this in a matter of weeks. So thank you.
Thank you. Jonathan.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, members of the council. For the record, my name is Jonathan Schleter. I'm the executive director of Westside Economic Alliance, which serves Washington County and western Clackamas County, and that includes the community of Wilsonville. So I am very pleased to be able to sit shoulder to shoulder with my colleagues here, Sandy McDonough from the Portland Business Alliance and John Molis, because this is a win for the region. We would have preferred that it be on the west side, perhaps, but this is good for the region. I congratulate you, and I congratulate you for this opportunity to bring this employer to Oregon and to our region. I can point to examples of manufacturing companies in the Portland metro region who, once they locate here, the economic multiplier benefits go well beyond the jobs that they have indicated are coming your way with this ordinance and opportunity. Intel in 2005, Nike in 2005, Solar Genentech in 2006, City of Hillsboro and OECDD in 2009, Clackamas County in 2010, the metals and machinery manufacturers in 2010, Intel again in 2011. You get the point. A number of companies have all studied what their contributions to the communities are when they expand and locate in a given community. And the multiplier benefit is well beyond the reach of this company. And the services, supplies, and support, business and economic development that it allows in your community and in this region. In the economic indicator sheet that I've just passed out to you, we face some pretty grueling statistics. That in our region right now, we are faced with 87,000 people who are unemployed. 37,000 here in Multnomah County alone. This is a great opportunity to plant the flag for green and sustainable technology, innovative technology, manufacturing employment in the Portland metro region. I congratulate you for this opportunity, and I urge your support for the ordinance.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams, commissioners. My name is John Molis. I'm the executive secretary of the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council. And I'm here today as well to urge you to take the steps necessary to allow Solo Power to locate in North Portland. I'd like to thank the mayor and the city councilors and their staffs and Chair Andrews and the PDC staff and all the other staffs that the folks to my left that have mentioned that I don't even know who they are, but all the hard work that everybody has put in to bring us to this day today. And I also would like to second Chair Andrews' remarks earlier about having a focused economic development policy that I think benefits us all in being coordinated and laser sharp in what we're trying to do around here, and you can see it paying off. All of you know how difficult the last couple years have been, and I know all of you know that the construction industry has been battered harder than anybody else. Over the last 6 months with Intel ramping up, we've probably went from 35% of our members being unemployed on average down to around 30. Some locals are maybe getting close to 25. But I would want to reassure the folks from Solo Power here today or any other company that is looking, that is either here and looking to expand or coming in from out of the area and wants to build a facility, that anything that you can dream, that you can draw, that you can put on a piece of paper, we can build it. And that's with local, skilled, knowledgeable contractors and a local, skilled workforce of apprentices and journeymen and women. Anything you throw at us, we can build it. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Next, last invited panel, David Rule, PCC, Rockwell, Paul Riggs from the Columbia Building Trades Council, and who am I forgetting? Is that it? Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, commissioners. My name is Dr. David Rule. I'm president of the Rock Creek campus for Portland Community College. On behalf of our district president and our board of directors, I'm here to speak in favor of solar powers coming to Portland. As you know, PCC has a long tradition of very effective collaboration with industries, helping them design curriculum specifically for their needs. Since last Friday and the press conference announcement, we have moved from emails, now moving to phone calls, and setting up tours of our training facilities for this company. And with that, we're delighted that you're bringing these jobs to the greater Portland area, and we stand ready to partner with Solar Power in any way possible.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Riggs.
Mayor Adams, commissioners, again, I'm Paul Riggs with Columbia Pacific Building Construction Trades Council. We're the local council here of 15 construction unions representing 15,000 construction workers, 30% of those unemployed, just like John said. Thank you for having the foresight to bring this plant here. It would have been terrible to see it slip away. Many of us were out in Wilsonville promoting this, and we saw it unwind, and it would have just been a horrible blow to the area. It's one thing, like many people have said, the initial construction jobs. You know, we have the people to do it, and that will put them to work, but the residual effect of having a plant here that's going to employ up to nearly 500 people really sets into the motion the economic program that you have laid out, which is very simple. Jobs, economy, and quality of life in the Portland area. And our thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Has anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Does anyone wish to testify on this matter that did not sign up? All right. Carla, would you please call the vote on the item which has been substituted?
Fish?
This is the final vote on the matter now.
Yes, this is okay, an emergency.
So I want to just begin what will be a chorus of thank yous from the folks up here. First and foremost, I want to thank Mayor Adams, who has made job creation the centerpiece of his administration, and that is reflected in the work that PDC is doing, and it's reflected in the budget priorities that he submitted, and it's reflected in the action that we're poised to take today. So, Mayor, this is a big win for the region, as our friend testified, and congratulations for your leadership. I want to say something about Scott Andrews. Scott has a tough job, and when he goes to Timbers games, he gets rained on a lot.
You couldn't get better seats?
It's the one row in from the roof.
Ah.
And Scott's been a superb chair of the commission, and he has been a great partner of this council. I'm not quite sure how he does his day job because he spends so much time here briefing us and working tirelessly. And so that the public knows, Scott is not compensated for his work. He is a volunteer leader who is doing a superb job. And Scott, thank you for your leadership. A couple years ago, this council, following the lead of the mayor and with my full support, separated out housing and economic development. There were some skeptics in our community who wondered whether that was the right thing and whether that would leave both stronger or weaker. I think time has shown that that was a masterstroke, because about 70% of PDC's time was spent doing the housing side of the ledger, and that left not enough time to deal with the economic development side of the ledger. Today, I believe that PDC is stronger and more focused on the job issue, and I believe our Housing Bureau is stronger and more focused on meeting the needs of all Portlanders when it comes to housing. So I think that was the right decision, and I'm proud that the council gave this commissioner in particular so much support as we've gone forward. And finally, ultimately, this is about jobs, and it's about prosperity and about people being able to provide for themselves and have the services they need. the only way we're going to dig out of this hole is by creating good family wage jobs here. And you know, it for all of us, it is very inspiring when both labor and business come together arm in arm and say we're doing the right thing, because our goal is to meet the needs of both communities, to create prosperity and taxpayers, but also to put our folks back to work and give them opportunity. So this day belongs to the mayor and to PDC, but I want to just thank everyone who worked so tirelessly and to welcome Solo Power to Portland. Aye.
Saltzman.
Okay.
Saltzman, sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
This new voting order is throwing me off. Well, I too want to thank the mayor and the Portland Development Commission and Solo Power, Wilsonville, the Westside Economic Alliance, and everybody who's helped to keep this good company from going elsewhere. And I do think it's definitely a solid jobs, solid contribution to our tax base, and to opportunities that our residents so desperately need right now, both now and in the near future and in the long-term future, too, as we watch Solo Power truly develop into, I believe, the giant. I think we all believe it will become in this industry. It's certainly got the product that looks like it's going to be a clear winner. Certainly the flat panel, very flexible solar cells in front of us are something that looks like it's going to definitely knock the industry or set the new trend for the industry and make it a lot easier for a lot of buildings to go solar that in the past couldn't because of the weight loads associated with the existing solar arrays. So this is really a significant step in our future, and it's part of our clean, green future as well. So I'm very pleased to support this. Aye.
I think it should be apparent to all those that have watched the story unfold as to how Solo Power ended up here that it does require leadership. We use that term a lot, and I don't know that people always define for themselves what that means, but this is an example of leadership, especially as it was manifest by our able PDC Chair, Scott Andrews, and our Mayor, Sam Adams. I very much appreciate the work that went into making this happen. Aye.
Fritz.
When even the Oregonian editorial board lauds Mayor Adams for this proposal, you know it's got to be good.
Seven signs of the end of the earth. I expect locusts over the West Hills any minute. Sorry.
Quite all right. Thank you, Mayor Adams, for your leadership on this. As Commissioner Leonard said, this is wonderful. And it's also a sign when the only emails I get are also laudatory. Which is good too. We have the enterprise zones. It's one of the best opportunities, I believe, that we have, and we do have vacant signs in enterprise zones. So, to those who feel that this is a special deal, there's certainly some good work been done by Ken Rust and Linda Meng to make sure that the loan backstop is available. But the enterprise zone itself is a state program, as Chair Andrews said, and it's one of our best researched products, too, that we don't get the income unless the company moves here, and then it creates really good jobs. And we have done studies to show that indeed it does. There's additional benefits that are required for the employees. It's a great tool, and it benefits everybody. And so I'm really glad that we had it available and that Mayor Adams was able to nimbly go and offer Solo Power a home when Wilsonville wasn't able to do so. And I do appreciate the Westside Economic Alliance coming to recognize it's a regional issue and regional jobs. We do need, the mayor and I work hard on Metro Policy Advisory Committee to look at things in a regional manner. And the more we can collaborate and celebrate when we do things right, the better. So thanks to the Portland Business Alliance, to PCC and Clackamas Community College and others for their great work on this, and most of all to Solo Power for bringing this good product and great jobs to Portland. Aye.
Adams.
Well, Ryan and Tim, where did they go? Back away in the back? Thank you. Thank you for your willingness at dinner to entertain the idea that in 2 weeks we could come up with a deal. At least the outlines of a deal that would persuade you to stay in the region. And you didn't have to do that. You had other options. And so thank you for making the investment that you are. To Bruce Laird, thank you for facilitating that as well. We really appreciate it. To Colin Sears and Andy and Patrick as well, but we really appreciate your work on this. I know you've chased this company for years. I wouldn't say there's a restraining order, but it was. I know you never gave up, and you were supportive of Wilsonville when they were focused on Wilsonville, but you stayed in touch, and I really appreciate that. To Skip Newberry on my team, and Peter Parasol and Rehana on the Mayor's Economic Development team, appreciate their good work as well. Someone that might not, a bureau that doesn't often partner on issues like this, but the Portland Bureau of Transportation was very flexible and willing to be a partner on this unusual backstop. And I want to thank Director Tom Miller and his team for willingness to do that. Finally, I do want to thank Chair Scott Andrews, who I think will go down in history as the best PDC chair we've ever had. Your business expertise is incredibly valued. And as Commissioner Fish said, I'm really grateful you're able to spend as much time at this as possible, because you're making a huge difference in an area, as you've heard from others, that this city really needs it. So thank you. Aye. Congratulations. That deserves a clap. Back to the regularly scheduled program. Brain damage. We're back on item. Yeah, thank you. All right, and we were in the middle of a conversation with Director Schaff and team. So the decision before the City Council today is on the rates only, and whether for both water and sewer, and then garbage, and then I believe permitting rates.
Right.
So the question is, it's first reading, reminder, and so the question is, what are those rates going to be, and are there any amendments that anyone wants to offer? We're focused on water right now. We will come back to BS before we go to garbage and permits. I think you were in conversation.
Well, I think you answered my questions for me.
Okay.
So I still haven't had an answer to my question of what operations and maintenance am I buying with 5.7 this year versus if we were to have a 4.9% or a 4.3% rate this year and then have the higher rate in 13-14.
You're not buying anything. You're paying for decisions we made in the past. So they are increased maintenance, the wholesale contracts, reduced demand, CIP projects, all of those things that we decided in 07, 08, 08, 09, and 09, 10, or 06, 07, 07, 08, and 08, 09.
And so can you just break that down, take it to the next level, and relate that to the rate? That's, I think, the missing piece that's happening.
Those examples?
Sure. So back in 06, 07,
well, but I think we all understand that, and I can explain it, but I want you guys to explain as though you're explaining to a person that's for the first time coming and asking, translate why those decisions then mean the rate, deferred rate increase now, if you understand what I'm asking.
No.
Thank you.
Sorry.
So we're paying today for decisions, let's say, for an example, the deferred, water contracts.
Right.
Just take that as an example. As an example, break out just approximately what percent of that deferred rate increase that is and explain why that impacted our rates today.
Okay. Well, we made the decision to compromise on the wholesale water contracts.
So explain what that means.
Well, we gave a higher rate of return to the
We accepted a lower rate of return
in order to on what the wholesale customers were paying us, in order to
they paid us less money.
Less money.
Okay.
And in exchange, they signed long-term commitments with guaranteed purchase quantities.
So why is that showing up in the rates today, and why was that deferred to today? Explain how you did that.
That was less money. Okay. So we had a choice. We could raise the rates then to cover that ongoing.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to break this down so we go step by step. When you say then, we signed the contracts in 2006.
In 2006.
And so then we were all of a sudden when we signed the contracts, and I'm not asking these questions because I don't know the answer, but I'm asking these questions because I do know the answer, and I'm trying to help you walk through this. So there are more than one person that we heard a PIRB member say today, I'm voting against this because I don't understand it. So what I'm trying to do is illustrate by this one point, and then if others want to extrapolate to other examples, we can do that. But we're going to use the same process that I intend to walk through. So in 2006, we signed wholesale contracts, which ended up having the wholesale customers who are like Tualatin Valley, Tigard, Rockwood, Gresham, others, pay us less money than we used to get and that we depended on to keep our rates as low as they were.
That's correct.
So we could have, in 2006, come to the council and asked for more money from Portland ratepayers to make up for the amount that we are no longer getting from our wholesale customers, but instead we decided to do what?
Instead, we decided to use our fund balances to provide some basically one-time money to wait and incur the rate increase later.
And so, why were those fund balances so high that we had balances to use then?
It's a combination of factors. I don't know the exact answer.
There was no nefarious reason.
No. I mean, it was just what it was. Sometimes we underspent compared to what we had planned. Sometimes revenue was exceeding our plan. There were various factors.
So the Water Bureau found itself in a place where it had an option to spend down money in a savings account, let's say.
Yes.
Spend down money in a savings account to subsidize for the lack of money we were now receiving from the wholesale customers.
That's correct.
And so today you are saying we've spent our savings account and we still have the same ongoing costs. And we still don't have the income that we thought we were going to get from the wholesale contract, so we need to reflect what we no longer are able to draw out of our savings account into an increased rate, which is part of that 5-point-some percent that
yes,
we're charging that, for deferred yeah, rate. And is that example applicable to each of the items that adds up to the deferred rates?
The same concept applies to all of those okay. items that combined make up the 5.7%.
So when you're asked, okay, but if I want to defer these rate increases again, whereas 5 years ago and 4 years ago and 3 years ago, you could have drawn from your savings account, the reason you're saying today we have to reduce services is you don't have the savings account any longer. So you have to pay today for the services you receive today, and you can't subsidize the rates with an account somewhere.
Basically correct. We do have some money in our savings account still, if you want to call the savings account, but we don't want to draw it below prudent levels.
Why?
Just in case of unforeseen expenses.
What's an example of an unforeseen expense?
We have to run, we have a very hot summer and we have to run groundwater for a very long period of time beyond what's budgeted. And we might have to dip into our savings for that sort of thing.
What does groundwater cost to run compared to water from the Bull Run?
Well, water from the Bull Run is free and groundwater is pumped.
Why does that cost more?
Because you have to pay for the power.
How much does that cost?
I don't have a per gallon figure.
You know how much per day? I know you know that.
No. I'd have to come back to you and tell you what the number is.
It's hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, it's It's fairly significant.
Right. And then if you have a main break.
Well, a main break is something I'm not sure what your question is related to a main break.
What we're talking about I'm anticipating questions are going to be asked in order to come up with creative ways in order to reduce the rates beyond what you have. So what I'm trying to get on the table here is if you do have reserve funds, you need it to pay for emergencies that may occur. Groundwater use is one of them. It costs a lot of money to run the generators. You may have a main break or a series of main breaks. You may have some catastrophic failure of the one of the three lines that come to Portland from Bull Run.
Our goal is to have 45 days worth of operating funds available to us. And generally we have that. We have dipped below it.
Briefly once in recent years.
Go ahead.
And having that level of prudent reserves that you don't go into on a regular basis is part of the reason that we have a good bond rating and get good interest rates.
That's going to be my next question. To what extent do those reserves reflect our AAA bond rating?
It's a significant item. It's not the sole item, but it's the significant item.
Okay.
And how much of the deferred increase did we borrow to pay for whatever we paid for in those 3 years?
Did you borrow or did you draw down on existing
or have
funds?
Did you issue bonds to pay for any of the?
We do not issue bonds to pay for any operating expense. And most of the items, not all of them, but most of them were operating expenses. Okay. There was very little that was capital and bond funded.
But some was bond funded.
A small amount. I don't have the number in front of me.
But some of this deferred rate increase does, in fact, pay for repayment of bonds.
Of bonds, yes. That debt service has been ongoing since the bonds were issued. And
but you don't, at this point, know what amount.
I don't.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. That's very helpful.
There's another one down here.
I think the final point that I don't understand is why we're going for 5.7 this year, 4.9 the following year, and 4.3. Why not average it out?
Well, go ahead. I'm going to let you.
We average out the totality of our factors causing rate changes so that we try and keep the total rate change approximately level. This is just one component within that. So other items that may be more erratic are, you know, balanced out with this.
Isn't the LT2 going to go up if we have to do it? Be more than 3.5 that we're projecting for next year?
More in what way? It's 3.5 next year. It will have a different impact. No, 3.5 and 11.12, 12.13, 13.14 bumps up to 6 in 14.15 and 4 in 15.16. So we tried to spread it out as much as possible.
So that was what I was hoping for in seeing the 5 and 10 year projections, is all of the pieces.
They do 5 year projections regularly. They can do 50 year projections if you would like. They will be completely unreliable because after a point, there are unpredictable factors that happen in the economy, such as recessions, such as interest rates, such as employment, and other factors, contract settlements, wage increases. So I think it's pretty typical for the utilities to do 5-year forecasts. 10-year forecasts can be done. They're just not as reliable.
Granted. And I remember when BES did the big pipe project, it was clearly laid out for citizens that it was going to be 20 years of rate increases, and we all kind of said, yes, we need to get the Willamette clean. Similarly, if we move forward on the
10 years.
Plan for LT2, if we have to do that, that's supposed to be done. What's the end date for LT2 compliance?
The absolute end date is going to be December 31st, 2020, when Washington Park is taken offline.
And do we have the rate projections through that point?
We can provide you with what we think the rate projections will be that far out.
That would be helpful. But thank you.
With a huge caveat and asterisk that says we don't think they're very reliable after a certain period of time. But we will do that, yes.
Thank you. That would be helpful. And I think my final question on this is, do you have an assessment of deferred maintenance? Do you have catching up to do to replace 100-year-old pipes the way that BES does?
Oh, absolutely. I'd have to go back to our asset management presentation that we did a couple months ago. But sure. I mean, we have We have a lot of needs that we're not meeting. We are keeping, we are treading water. We're not making progress, but we're treading water. And we have a system that is getting old, but as Mike likes to say, Portland's a good